This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning. Welcome to My Opinion Booth. My name is Sonia Booth, and today's topic, today's title, Not In My Name, Redefining Masculinity Through the Not In My Name Movement. My guest today is Siyabulela Gentile, Chief Executive of Not In My Name SA, social entrepreneur and speaker. Welcome to Opinion Booth.
Thank you so much, Sonia, for having me. I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited. The last invite I had last year, I couldn't make it. So I was very excited when I got the invitation. Thank you very much.
Because you were a very busy man.
No, not really. I was, yeah.
I mean, I need to book you months in advance. You know?
Yeah, well, right.
you're all over the country, you know, doing all sorts of things. But I mean, social justice, we're going to get more into that. Yeah. So now, your full name, as I've mentioned, Siyabulela.
Yes.
It means we are thankful, we are grateful.
Yes, gratitude. Re leboga. We are thankful. Yes.
So now I want to focus more on that thankful and grateful part of your name. Are your parents still thankful, or do you give them sleepless nights?
No, of course they are. Unfortunately, Mama passed on in 2014.
Oh no! Sorry
in
to
fact,
hear that.
Yes, in fact, it's her birthday today. So
oh wow!
I woke up a bit of less down, yeah, but I'm okay. Tata is still alive. But yeah, they're still thankful. I mean, I've never been a problem child, you know. I can't remember even one neighbor coming home to complain, or teachers or anything like that. I've always contained myself even at a very young age, you know. So I've always been, so I think I've lived up to my name, you know. They'd always look at me and say, "Now, thank you, God." But funny enough, because my father's a traditionalist, you know, to him it was like Siyabulela Magcina, being our clan name. You know, so he was saying to, because I'm the last born, so he was like
the spoiled one.
Yeah, well, yeah. Siyabulela Magcina Mahle. Then they closed that chapter of their lives of making babies and things like that. So that's how my name became to be.
Magcina Mahle, what does that mean?
Magcina. It's a clan, part of the Abathembu, AmaXhosa.
Okay.
Yes. Okhopho, Nonkwindlu, Ncancashe, Malamba Yenhle, Okadlume. So,
oh, wow. So he's even cleared up about his clan.
Yes, no, I know exactly where I come from. Yeah. It's important, you know, if you want to know where you're going, you need to know where you come from.
I like that.
So being born and raised in the Northwest has not made me forget who I am, because both my parents were Xhosa, both grandparents, maternal. So my blood, it's X, you know. Mandlaka X, yeah.
Okay. So that's how old would your mom have been today?
She would have been 59.
Okay.
Yes.
So she was still young.
Yeah, yeah. She had to live early. She left very early. She was 50. Is it 55, 56 when she passed on?
That's my mom's age. That was very young.
Yeah, yeah. She lost her life due to cancer. Sinew what? Something. It was here, cancer. It was, it had something to do
around
with the sinuses.
The face. Oh,
yes, yes.
Wow.
So it started feeding off her jaws, you know, and the gums, and then it went to the eye, and then it went to the brain, and she couldn't make it, unfortunately.
Goodness me.
Yeah, it was a very traumatic experience, you know. It started off as something small, you know. She would wake up the other day and she's swollen. We'd take her to the doctor, and doctors would give her, you know, painkillers and blah, 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 blah. So when they found out that it was here at Steve Biko Academic Hospital in Pretoria, we had to move her this side. It was late, unfortunately. They couldn't do anything.
So it was already advanced stages.
And I remember they sent her back to a hospital called Sepong in Klerksdorp. And this other day, the nurse called us and said to us, you know, guys, unfortunately, you have to prepare for the worst, you know. And that was, I think, around the 23rd, 24th of December. And two, 3 days later, she passed on. There was nothing else they could do, you know.
That's a lot for a family to handle and deal with. And I want to ask you, I mean, something like that. I mean, cancer is a mother. You know, I wanted to use a swear word, but I'm gonna try and be a lady because you know the C word as they call it. No one wants to have conversations around the word cancer.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm sure you've dealt with a lot of adversity, but that was very close to your heart.
That's true.
Did all of that shape the man that you are? You turned out to be, you know, a man with empathy and sympathy.
Yeah, it did. Though at first, I you know, there's this thing which is one of the things that we will be discussing when we're having the redefining masculinity. We'll talk about it later. Is that, you know, there's this thing that indoda ikhali, meaning a man does not
which
cry,
which is nonsense.
Which is nonsense. And I was one of those people who believed that indoda ikhali. When Mama passed on, I cried after hearing the news. After that, I never cried again. And last year, around February, March, I got admitted in hospital for anxiety. In fact, doctors said I was almost depressed. Some said I was depressed. Only to find out that, you know, I had not dealt with Mama's passing properly. And I got married last year and she was not there, you know. And so I have been seeing a psychologist who then told me, you know what, you have not you didn't deal with your mother's death, you know, and you've always been, I mean, being the last born, I'm Mama's baby, you know.
Yeah,
she was I was the closest person to her, you know, even until she passed on. So by that time I went through the process of getting married without my mother, and she had just passed on three years earlier. So all of that became too much for me. Then I just couldn't take it anymore. That's how I ended up at MediClinic in Pretoria. I was admitted. I had to go through a lumbar puncture. They needed some fluid from my brain to check what the problem was, because I've got a problem with migraines, you know. So it was a lot of complications, but then I pulled through, and for me that was the turning point in my life, because that's when at that hospital bed, that's when I thought to myself, you know what, maybe the life that I'm living, not even maybe, but I could feel that there was this void in my heart, that I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing on earth. And for me that was the turning point. That's when shortly after that I then decided to say, you know what, I'm going to heed the call of being an activist, of standing up for the voiceless, and I left everything. I left engineering, I left all things, and said, you know what, because I believe in God, that the will of God will not take you where His grace cannot sustain you. Mama's passing played a huge role in shaping the man that I am. Not only her passing, her life also. Because, you know, that woman was very humble. I don't understand how she did it, but she had a way with people, you know. Sometimes I would call her Siavuma. So today it's her birthday. I wish she was here, but you know, it is how it is. It's life.
I think she's with you, because I mean you've got a glow. I don't know if you were when you looked at yourself in the mirror before you left your house. I'm sure your partner told you that you've got a glow.
Thank you.
I'm gonna try not to mess up my mascara now.
Sorry about that.
What I wanted to say next was that you mentioned something profound, because I'm all about, I'm still discovering my purpose. I think I know what my purpose in life is, but I still don't know how to go about it. It's almost like there's just something, just a blockage of some sort, and I'm still waiting to get to a point where you are right now. And I was about to ask your age, because it's very rare for someone as young as you to have found their purpose.
Yeah.
And for me, it doesn't get better than that.
Yeah.
Why? Because we are all here for a reason. And I believe we're still working, you know, walking the earth because we haven't fulfilled the mandate, the purpose that we here to do. That's my belief in life. For the fact that you and I are still here, it means mission is not accomplished.
Yeah.
But okay, how old are you?
It's a taboo. You don't ask a man age. That's what you ladies always say.
No. It's the other way around. No. You don't ask a woman her age, and I don't ask you your golf handicap.
Okay.
That's how it works.
Okay. No, I'm 26. I'm turning 27.
You are so young. You must call me Sis Sonia from now on. Okay, like Sonia. You know, you must, not Mama Sonia, because I think I'm not old enough to be your mother.
I was actually thinking about that.
No, I'm not old enough to be, but from now on, it's Sis Sonia when you see me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sis Sonia.
You found your purpose last year. You were 25.
Yes, and that's when I also.
You know
got
how
married.
Lucky you are.
Do you think so?
You are.
It hasn't been easy. Hey, I'll tell you that. But people always ask me, how do I know this is it? And my answer is simple. You know, with all the challenges that we come across with. You know, we go broke. We've all you see with Not In My Name has been from our own pockets, and not only me, but people that I work with. We go broke. Having to leave my job meant that I had to let go of other comforts of life. I had to move into a flat from a townhouse, a very nice house, and all those things. But yet I'm still doing this, and I always ask myself and I pray and ask God, but why am I still? And I'm happy for some reason. And that's how you'll know that, you know what, this is what I'm supposed to be doing in life. You wake up every morning. Sometimes I go to bed complaining, these people, the problem, another one will call you from Bloemfontein and you're in Pretoria, another one Cape Town, come and help us here. Recently, 2-3 days ago, there's an issue of land, Masangomabare, they've taken our land, and now we can't perform our rituals, blah, 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 blah. They told us that you can assist us, you know, all these things. And I'd look at my life and say, but guys that are my age, you know, they're still, you know,
a lot of people
life.
Your age are still clueless.
Yeah,
about.
So I'm like, but God, why do we have to go through all these things? But I'm happy, you know. There's that element of fulfillment. I woke up in the morning, and I'm surrounded by, you know, this life. How did I get here? But I'm happy at the end of the day. And for me. That's how you'll know. And you know those small anyana thank yous, kyaleboha. You know, without you, you know the court cases that we've closed, the bursaries that we've secured, you know, the young and old women that we've assisted with self defense classes, with pepper sprays, you know, all the work that we've been doing, and you go to bed at night, you know, with not even. 50 cents in your pocket, you've used all the money that you've had, but you know what, you are happy.
And remember the glow I mentioned earlier, it's actually contentment. Now that you mentioned that you're happy, sometimes you go to bed, you don't have much money in your bank account, but you're still content. That's the glow that I'm referring to, because a man is not, you know, men don't like, you know, the word glow, just like some people, men don't like to be called beautiful, but you are content.
Exactly.
So now you are qualified as an engineer.
Yes.
And then you're also an aspiring writer.
Yes.
An author.
Aspiring author, yes. But,
You are, okay, are you a writer? Have you started something?
Yeah, I write a lot. I had started a blog, left it, but that was before I came into the space. I'm currently writing for the United Nations magazine. I contribute articles. I only started this year, so I'll be submitting my next article very soon. But I spend most of my time writing. But my writing is how do I say it? It's personal. You know, I don't know how many manuscripts I have. I'd write page 49, then leave it, then get interested in something else. Then
okay.
So for me, I'm not. I think I've not reached your level whereby I can sit down, you know, with this bit disciplined with my writing, you know, and I'm not yet addicted like some people I know. So yeah, but it's something that I love doing, and I'm hoping that over time I'll get better and I would gain that confidence to share my work with the world.
You are so selfless. I mean, the fact that you qualified as an engineer, mm-hmm. and like you said, you left all those comforts. I mean, I would imagine an amazing salary, you know.
That's okay.
A great disposable income, I would imagine. And you are so selfless. You left all of that for the unknown. I say the unknown because you don't know if you're going to be having money tomorrow.
Yes.
And then you're doing what you're doing for the benefit of the greater society.
That's true.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And you're only 26. You're an old soul.
I think so.
You are an old soul. I mean, I look at you, there's so much maturity in you, and I'm still in disbelief about your age.
Is it?
It's incredible. Take it in your stride. It's a compliment.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so let's talk about Not In My Name.
Yes.
It's a result and solution-driven civil movement.
Movement, yes.
Powerful and relevant.
Yeah. So Not In My Name started as the phrase "Not In My Name" has been widely used all over the world, especially in the Middle East, you know, with ISIS and in Israeli and the wars that are going on in there, and also in South Africa it came and it would just be used loosely. So just after the death of Karabo Mokoena, when she was killed and set alight by a partner, I decided to put my phone down and because, you know, there's many activists on Twitter and Facebook.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I call them social media activists
or thumb activists.
Yes. And I decided to take to the streets. At that time I posted on social media, gents, let's march, you know. And some people would laugh because I usually joke around on Facebook, like, march. I said, let's march against ourselves, because we can't march to the government. We can't march. We are the perpetrators of these things. And if you remember at that time, you know, these cases were prevalent. There were so many of them.
Almost every day, actually.
Almost every day. And then I just got sick and tired of it. And then two of my friends came on board, and then we decided to do a march, and they assisted me to organize the march. So we co-organized the march. It was a success. I mean, we started working on the march on, we agreed Sunday afternoon that we are going to do it. And then we designed the poster and then we sent it out. And the following day it was Monday, you know, and the poster was all over the country, you know, because men all over the country were quiet about these things. No one was willing to come out and do something about it. And the next minute I got a call from Power FM. They said, no, we want to talk about the major EOA. There's no way we can turn back now. This thing, if it has reached media, for the sake of our names, we shouldn't have yet. But we have to do this. And then I did that interview. I remember it was with Babi Moloi on Power Perspective. From there, there was no turning back. You know, we would receive calls left and right. And it affected my job. Remember that time I was working a 9-to-5. Now, I had to do my work. I had to answer phones. I had to do media interviews. I had to attend radio interviews. I had to go to TV. And for me, the space was overwhelming. But yeah. Over 3,500 people attended the march, and Matthew was there.
I'm proud.
Proud, he's been very, you know, so we did that. And then after that, I said to the guys, okay, while we're still doing that, we're joined by other guys, other activists who are now co-founders of Not In My Name. And then we said, you know what, the problem with campaigns, especially in South Africa, is that they die down. You know, if today we are talking about, for an example, albinism, then we all campaign, do not kill people who've got, you know. And then after 10 days, we're talking about something else. Zuma must go.
Because there's too much going on, though.
There's too much that is going on. I said, guys, you know, we need to sustain the campaign. What can we do? And then he said, no, people already know us as those guys who did not, they're not in my name much. And they said, it's fine. Let's call ourselves Not In My Name, SA. Mm. Then we registered Not In My Name, SA as a non-profit company, as a non-governmental organization. And since then, we've never stopped working. Initially, it was against women abuse. But then, you know, you realize that there's other socioeconomic factors that around a woman abuse. You know, you talk about unemployment, you talk about all these other things. So we then said, you know what, let's transform this movement into a civil rights movement whereby we can now be able to you know, tackle other issues. That is how we've managed to secure bursaries for learners in Hammanskraal to attend to do IT course. You know, we've managed to get employment for some people, because the most important thing, if you want to say you want to deal with women abuse, you need to empower women, and that is through education. You know, that is the most important thing. You must open doors for women so that they can be independent. Then in that way, they don't have to depend on us, on men. So yeah, that's how we started. But it was a call to men, you know, because that day we didn't submit any memorandum to anyone. It was funny because we're saying, no, we are marching against ourselves. And when you say that, people think you're stupid, but we are not. You know, you look at the statistics. You know, femicide, women being killed by their intimate partners. It's us men who are doing these things, and we are not saying there are no men who are being abused. There are, but now the conversation was around women who are being killed every day and set alight.
Yes,
you know, so. The long and short of it, Not In My Name, it's now a civil society movement that is against anyone who seeks to, you know, undermine our civil liberties. So we are the custodians of our constitution, you know. Everyone who says, who seeks to undermine our justice liberties, we are saying to them, Not In My Name. You cannot continue to do this, and we sit back and watch. That is what Not In My Name is, the long and short of it. We are very growing very fast as a civil movement. Fortunately, we have managed to pull the ladies now. In fact, our deputy chairperson is a lady. Our head of public relations is a lady, and so on and so forth. So it's no longer about gender now. You know, it's about men and women coming together for a greater cause.
The people's movement.
The people's movement.
I love
that. That's how we call it. Yes,
I love
the people's movement.
So now, your organization's focus is simple yet profound: to empower South Africans to understand and use the powers they possess through the Constitution.
Through the Constitution, yes.
I responded to a tweet yesterday with the hashtag #RespectTheVoter. There's a reason why I did that. Citizens of this country don't realize how much power they have. We need a woke nation.
Yeah.
We need people who are clued up about current affairs and pertinent issues that cannot be overlooked and ignored. So now, it can't be easy as a man to say to other men, yes, we are trash. We know we can do better. I don't care if you've laid a hand on a woman or not. If you're not standing up against it, you are equally responsible. Those were your words. To women, on behalf of all men of South Africa, whether or not they agree with me, we apologize.
That's something I said.
That was,
yes,
you.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I have this to say to you and other men of your caliber. On behalf of all the women of the world, we appreciate your efforts.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you. See what I did there.
I see what you did there. Yeah. No, thank you so much.
So now, take me through the process. I mean, you mentioned that the wake up call or the shake up that led to you starting and registering this movement was because of particularly around the time that Karabo's case was trending. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, it was a brutal end to her life, inhumane in every way possible.
True.
So now, Take me through the process. So here you see an item, for lack of a better word, you see a topic, a conversation trending on Twitter. Mm-hmm. What is that very first step? I mean, do you then now go back to the office and see and sit down with your co-founders and say, guys, ladies, we need to organize a march? Mm. Take me through the processes of starting a dialogue, a movement, a march, a demonstration, that very first step. I mean, the planning, logistics.
Yeah. Usually what would happen is we've made that relationship, especially with media. We've got a lot of friends in media. So some of the stories, even before they break on mainstream media, we would have gotten calls, you know, what is not in my name saying about so and so, what is not in my name going to do about this? And it's the social responsibility that we have. We've gotten to a point whereby we understand, you know, sometimes you'll get a call around 12, you know, they'll be saying, hey, so and so did 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, what are you going to do about it? And at that time you're sitting there with no resources, with no money, with nothing, and you'll be like, you know what, I'll get back to you, you know. Then you call the guys, let's meet urgently. But because of technology, you know, there's WhatsApp and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, guys, we need to talk about this 1, 2, 3 quickly. Such a case is trending on Twitter, how can we be involved, you know? And then we take it from there. We've over the months we've developed what I would call a skill of discernment, you know. Like the other case which we almost took, we'll talk about it later on, of some lady at a certain institution of higher learning. So what we do is we would find out about the case at first. If ever there's families that are involved, we contact the families and then we find out from them. We are seeing 1, 2, 3, because it's important that, you know, there's danger with social media. You know, some of the things the family members find out about these things on social media, and then we'd contact them and say, are you aware of 1, 2, 3? Yes. Okay. This is the state that the case is in. It has sparked national outrage. We are from Not In My Name. How can we get involved? Would you like us to be involved? And the family will, of course, tell us, yes, please do something about this. Then we take it from there. We, contrary to popular belief, we are not these radical activists who just wake up and take to the streets. No, it's like marching. You don't
peaceful.
You don't just decide to march. That's where most people are missing the point. You know, they'll say to us, but why? How is it that you guys every time when you march, people come? You don't just march. You need to study the environment. You need to study the mood in the country. You know. If we are talking about the case of Karabo Mokoen, and then you stand up and say, let's march against tax, no one will come to your march. So you need to be relevant. You need to know what is happening in the country. So the first step would then be to contact the families, and then after the families have given us a go-ahead, we would then proceed with our planning. But if no specific families are involved, we would then get in touch with the companies or the organizations that are involved, and then we take it from there. Like the story that involved the former deputy minister for education, Duduzi Mana. We tried to talk to him and we couldn't, you know. He that was arrogant in a way. And then we then decided to take it to the streets, because if you don't want to talk to us, if you don't want to listen to us, we are going to talk to you the only way we know how, and that is through mass mobilization. And that is the strongest point of Not In My Name. That is how we managed to build the campaign into a success that it is today. So we'd normally do that, but if all fails, usually a march is the last resort. When people see us march, they think we just decided to march. No.
Because you're bored.
No. We exhaust all means of communication with the relevant parties. You know, it's the same as Usiabonga. You know, the crime or the killings between the meter taxi operator, the taxi operators, you know, it has been going on for some time, and we have been quiet. So we've tried to engage the Department of Transport, try to engage it, but in some instances, it's not safe for us. Remember, we are a small organization. We're still growing. We don't have security. We don't have, so it gets dangerous at times. And then you need to tread carefully, you know. So usually a march would be a last resort. When you see us marching, then you'll know, they've tried all they can. And sometimes we are marching because we want to mobilize national support. You know, we want to get people who are not aware of some issues on board, and also want to put pressure, or be it on the government or on the private organizations that are involved in the certain topic that is pending at the time. So that is how we usually do our things. But it is important that you get both sides of the story, especially with cases that involve gender-based violence. You know, one topic that we were discussing, in fact, last week at with some comrades at UNISA, was that the society is not ready to have other conversations, especially conversations around men who actually I mean women who falsely accuse men of
rape. That's another big problem.
It's happening, you know, and we're talking about this, and comrades were saying no, but once you say that, feminists will eat you alive, you know. But it's happening, and we need to talk about these things. And I think that is one of the things that made Not In My Name to be where it is, because we try and tackle issues, enchanted grounds, you know, topics that people don't want to talk about. Because once you start talking about women who falsely accuse men of rape, obviously you'll be labeled as misogynist, you'll be labeled as patriarchal, you'll be labeled as somebody who advocates for rape, you know. But it's happening.
Or rape apologists, right?
Rape apologists. There are many men who are doing time for the crimes they did not commit. And unfortunately, no one wants to talk about those things. So it's one of the conversations that we really need to have. And they have started. And it's one of the conversations that we'll be discussing, we'll be having, obviously, on Sunday. Because you cannot redefine masculinity if you don't talk about these things. If you don't talk about how did it become... How did it get to this point? Why men are this angry? You know, we need to tackle these issues from all angles.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's just how it is, you know.
So now, I mean, talking about great turnouts, I mean, last year you had a march, yes. As you mentioned, you saw Matthew there, he was representing the family, but I think he was doing it for me and his sisters and his mother and, you know, future makotis or whatever, and nieces and so forth. The justice for Siyabonga March took place a couple of weeks ago on the 9th of March.
Yes.
What is the update on that case?
The South African Police Services has assured us that they are working 24/7 on the case. But honestly, there hasn't been anything that I would say we are happy with. They've not told us anything that we do not know. You know, it's still the same story that we had 2 weeks or a week ago. We are still investigating, and that cannot be right. You know, as much as they are doing their job, and we understand these investigations can be a bit tricky and they take time, but it's important that they get to the bottom of this. You know, I've heard rumors that there were cameras, or that there's people who saw what happened. So if ever that is true, I mean, that should speed up the process and make the investigations go faster. But we've not received anything as the movement. We last spoke to the family last week, the end of last week, yes, and they had not they've never told us anything. So the investigation is still ongoing, and would like to call upon all citizens who've got knowledge on or some news that can at least assist the police to, you know, to get these people who have done this, but most importantly to ensure that this thing never happens again. The Department of Transport, together with the South African Police Services, they need to make sure that they resolve this conflict between taxi operators. It's very important, otherwise we are going to have another Siyabonga Ngcobo very soon, and we can't afford that.
So now he I mean, what happened to Siyabonga happened with just him having worked for this what do they call it, e-hailing cap system, have they assisted the family in any way? I ask because word was doing the rounds that the company was fully aware of his exact location or the movements of his car at that particular time. But from what I saw on their Twitter account, because the person that he was due to pick up, a passenger, is the one that alerted this hailing I don't want to give them airtime by mentioning their name. So bearing in mind that they were made aware of what was happening at that moment, have they done their bit to assist their family or to try and help with private investigations of some sort? Because waiting for the government sometimes is actually futile, because there's a lot of incompetency. I'm not even going to sugarcoat it. There's a lot of incompetency and people that should actually be fired from their positions because they're absolutely useless.
With regards to our communications with them, they've been there for the family, you know. But of course, I wouldn't know to what extent. But what I always say is that no amount of support, either monetarily or emotionally or whatever way, can ever replace the loss of a human life. You know, if there's one thing that is irreplaceable, it's the human value. You know, so for me, what is important is that, of course, the family must get closure and all that. But what is important is that this never happens again. But those guys, we've met some of them when we're arranging the march, and they said that they were, you know, in talks with the family. Of course, it's one thing that we couldn't be involved in. You know, it was between them and the family. As to what extent or in what way did they assist the family? I wouldn't know. But in terms of this, the safety component of this whole thing, they equally have failed, Siyabonga. You know, I feel that they could have done something to protect him. Not only him, but their security measures that are in place have shown signs of incompetence, because people have been, you know, have been dying. This one was hurt. There's this other one who had acid spilled over his face, you know. And I remember one time another car was torched at just outside the APF lifestyle, you know. So all of them, this taxi, I almost called the name, but yeah. So they together with the police services, everyone who was involved in Siyabonga's case, they failed the boy, you know. And it's very sad. But again, it's life, you know. There's nothing we can do that will bring him back, except to say that the only way we can avenge his life is I was telling his classmates at the memorial service that the only way you can avenge Siyabonga's life is through excellence. You know, you need to work hard, because he was also an upcoming entrepreneur. I advised them to. He was due to have an event sometime next month. I said, do it, guys, and then if there's anywhere we can assist, personally I'm available to help you. So it's a very sad story. In fact, that's why I said something at the march that I regretted later, which was not right, because sometimes I get emotionally invested into these cases. I get very angry, especially with the case of Siyabonga. He didn't deserve. I mean, he was 21. He was 21.
Nobody deserves that,
you know. And for the fact that they did that to him alive, you know, whichever way you look at it, it's wrong. But how cruel or how heartless do you have to be to take someone while they're still alive, shove them into the boot of their car and set it alight? I mean, this person, obviously, they're screaming. And what is your conscience telling you? That's something else.
I can only wish and hope that his screams haunt them for as long as they live.
You know, and exactly.
So now tell me, as a man, do you feel that men are doing enough to address such issues? Let's be honest, men are very, they're full of ego.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm going to put it as bluntly as that.
Yeah, right.
And you alluded to that earlier. Mm. Because you mentioned that sometimes when you're having these conversations, men laugh and say, you're organizing this march, you're stupid, or it's because you've got too much on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of ego there. Personally, I'm of the opinion that such issues will be taken more seriously if more men stood up for us as women to say, enough is enough, not in my name.
Mm. That's true. You know, we've made enemies, both men and women, enemies in a sense that the cause that we stand for. Okay, there you go.
Thank you.
We need more men to do this. And I remember one of the things I said last year when we were marching is that you know, there's this notion that men ought to be protectors, and they're always challenged by saying, but then if one thing we need to ask ourselves is that we need to protect women from what, you know, do we protect them from other women? Do we protect them from men? And if we say we're protecting them from men, it means we're protecting them from ourselves. Now if we stop this toxic behavior of abusing women, of rape culture, of femicide, you know, then there's no need for us to be protectors of women. There wouldn't be any need for protection. So what then do you do? Do you need to protect women, or do we stop abusing women? Because if we stop, then there's no need for protection. But of course, we as men, we've got a different way of thinking. We've got people who still see women as subordinates, who still see women as sex objects, who still see women as, you know, nothings, you know, things that you can toy around with and
for entertainment.
For entertainment. And it's going to take us a long time to change those mindsets. And I always say that, as not in my name, we are aware that the outcomes of the work that we do are not going to be immediate, unfortunately. But even if it's a generation or two from now, you know, that will be gender-based violence-free, would have done our part. Because you are dealing with different men who come from different school of thoughts, you know. I always make this example. We had a conference, it's very fun and actually very sad, in Boksburg the other day. I remember the then Minister of Social Development was the Minister Batabile Dlamini, and other commissioners, and it was a men's conference. Now, you know, we're seeing at this conference, and there was this other song that said, "Eligama la makhosikazi asozel phela mandla, eligama la makhosi." And there was this guys from KZN, from SAPS, because they were wearing SAPS. They were from KZN. They lost it. They lost it and said, "Now you see, now we are going to have a problem." Just by us singing that song, they were offended, you know. And I thought to myself, yo, we have a long way to go. If a mere song emasculates grown dude men, just by saying, you know, ikamala makhosikazi asozel phela mandla, they felt emasculated, you know. They felt like their egos were bruised by a mere song. That should tell you the degree of the crisis that we are in. You know, how do you begin to tell that person to say to them, women are human just like yourself? You know, it will take you a day and a half just to explain that women are people like you, you know. And that is just the tip of the iceberg. There are men who still believe today that they can never be equal to women. And that is the where I personally agree with feminism. Because for me, feminism, from what I've learned, it's about equality. Nothing else nothing more. Well, of course, we've seen this misdirected anger, you know, from feminists, which can be justified. You know, the way we've treated women over the years calls for such anger. But feminism on its own, for me, is about equality. And I believe that woman says that, what's her name again? Chima something.
Chimamanda Ngozi.
Yes, we should all be feminists, you know. We still have a long way to go. That is why I've been calling for these conversations around masculinity. You know, there's different sort of kinds and sorts of masculinities, and there are different causes of how men react to women and to the environment around them. I made one example when we were launching the No Excuse campaign in Cape Town, which is where we marched again with Matthew. I said to comrades, you know, if we are going to deal with issues of gender-based violence in with regards to men, we need to find out why is it that men are so angry. And part of that, we cannot forget about the apartheid legacy. That was just one of the examples that I made. And then I was called as because the campaign in itself is called No Excuse. So, comrade said I was making an excuse for violence behavior. I said, listen, the apartheid government emasculated black men. You know, black men were made to feel as subordinates. You'll have a white boy slapping you, and then you couldn't do anything because he was your boss, you know. And all this anger was building up inside him, and now it had to be exerted out. Well, it didn't have to, but at some point this man would blow out, you know, and would exert this anger onto the nearest person, and that nearest person next to them is a black woman. Now all this misdirected anger against the black woman, where am I now as the young Siyabulela? I'm watching, and I'm watching my father doing this to my mother every day. It becomes normal. Patriarchy is normalized it. Okay, so if I want a woman to respect me, I must beat her up.
Mm.
Now, I grow up and I do that to my wife, my little boy, or my little
girl. Vicious cycle.
Now is the cycle. And I'm saying to them, we need to break the cycle. And for us to successfully break the cycle, we must go to the origins of how did this thing begin. Not only that, not only apartheid. You make another example of unemployment. Unemployment also is another factor. You know, a man's inability to provide for their family makes them feel emasculated.
Mm.
It makes you feel weak because of
takes
the societal...
Takes away their dignity.
Yes, because of the societal expectations of that a man should be a provider.
Yeah.
You know. I saw something online this not so long ago. They said empty pockets don't have any right to an erection.
Oh, wow.
So you, those things, imagine now you are unemployed like myself. You are told that because you are unemployed, you don't have right to sex.
You're useless. Yeah.
You're useless. So, and now here's this man thinking, my wife is working, or my girlfriend is the one that is bringing in the bread at home. And now these children, the society, I feel like I'm useless as a man. But now for me to retain that power, you know, for me to stay as the head of the family, I need to do something about this. I don't have money. I don't have resources. I don't have anything. Violence. If I beat her up, then she will respect me. She will know that I'm still the man in this house. The community will know that. So these things are deep and they are many. If we are not ready as a society to have these conversations, unfortunately, we will always be this country that is reactionary. We always react as opposed to being proactive. So part of what we do at Not In My Name is to open up this uncomfortable conversations to the society. We need to talk about these things. We need to talk about the socialization that masculinity is justified and is believed to be you know, that masculinity, for us to say we are masculine as men, we need to suppress women, we need to dominate women, and we cannot have such things continuing. So the fight against gender-based violence in general and toxic masculinity begins at the root cause. And this is what I always say, that these men have got problems. We need to talk to them. I said to the Department of Education, you know, we are dealing with angry learners now. And as a teacher, and this is what I was telling my brother-in-law in Free State this past weekend, that you are dealing with symptoms of these kids come to school, they're angry, they're what. And instead, you okay, there's no more corporal punishment now, but you punish them, you know, but you don't know what is happening at home. That is why then we need to develop a network of parents, the school, and the learners. You know, a lot is going on in these households, and now these children come to school carrying all these things. And if we are not addressing the issues at home, you are going to deal with angry students. How do you explain the recent video of that learner who threw the book?
Shocking behavior.
You know, it's unacceptable.
Oh, what's even more unacceptable is the fact that the parents supported her.
You know,
what kind of behavior are we encouraging
you,
as parents?
Tells you of the society,
yeah,
that this girl comes from, or the parents, the kind of society that
exactly.
So we need to first admit as South Africans that we're in a crisis. Once we've admitted that we're in a crisis, then we can proactively, you know, work around these issues. One quick example I can make: we tried to intervene and assist MEC Panyaza Lesufi after 84. School young girls Soweto were you know, were sexually violated, and now
the private investigator is abusing the very same.
So all these things, I always say that they are telling us something. We are in a crisis, and until we open up this I mean, how do you explain a 45-year-old who sexualizes a 2-year-old? I mean, how do you look at a 2 months, not even year,
and see sexy?
Mm. You know, how does it happen? We need to talk about these things. You can't look at even a 5-year-old. You can't sexualize a 5-year-old.
No.
You look at a 6-year-old and you get an erection. Something is wrong with you.
Mm.
And if we are not going to talk about these things as a society, we will always come out and say we condemn. That's what one thing our government does 100%. We condemn. They always come out and condemn. And unfortunately, if we don't do anything about these things, the situation will never change. And unfortunately, whatever it is that we accept, and you know, our children are going to embrace it because we accepted it, and the cycle will never be broken, unfortunately.
So now you have a dialogue this coming Sunday, the 25th.
Yes.
Redefining masculinity.
Yes.
People can obviously go on your website and social media pages to see how they can buy tickets if they want to be a part of that dialogue.
Of it, yeah.
And I really, really hope people are going to come in numbers, because we need to have these conversations.
Yeah, it's around masculinity, of course. But as I said earlier, you cannot talk about masculinity and not talk about feminism. You cannot talk about masculinity and not talk about the rights of the LGBTIQ community. You cannot talk about masculinity and not talk about social issues. So yeah, the dialogue is around masculinity. I've got interesting people who are panelists: Kofi Ofori Boateng, a friend of mine, and there's Naledi Chiroa, she's a feminist, and Khotazo is also very vocal about social issues, and you'll also be giving us a perspective of the LGBTIQ community. So I'll be facilitating the dialogue. What is important is that we kickstart this dialogue, and for me, a long-term plan is that these dialogues can move from, you know, your typical, your Pretoria setup, you know, at the station lounge where it's nice, people are having drinks. And but unfortunately for that, we're gonna need funds, you know. I want to take it to the rural areas. I want to take it to the townships.
And so corporates listening right now, if you welcoming them to get a hold of you, please, to try and get into a partnership of some sponsorship of some sort,
please. Because now the biggest challenge, especially with this one that is happening on Sunday, is that we've requested people to buy entrance for $150, and for some people, especially students, they have shown interest into coming into this dialogues, but they can't. And if I could personally sponsor the whole thing, I would. Then everyone would just
absolutely
come in free. But now the venue has to be paid, and there's refreshments. We need to pay for them.
Yeah.
So that is how it is.
I'm gonna give you names, and I want you to give me just one word, the first word that comes to mind after reading out a particular name. Okay. There's four names. Sandy Lemantswe.
Murderer.
Arthur Mafokate.
Abuser.
Bathabile Dlamini.
Woman hater.
Qedani Mahlangu.
Another murderer.
Siyabulela. Thank you so much for spending the hour. It's up. No, can you believe it? I wish I had longer. I cannot believe it myself. So I'm wrapping up. Thank you so much for spending the hour with me.
Not a problem.
My humble opinion. Critics often ask what a march would achieve, what a demonstration would achieve, what an awareness campaign would achieve. If you are one of these people, then please listen with great veneration to this quote by Martin Luther King Jr. The ultimate tragedy is not the oppression and cruelty by the bad people, but the silence over that by the good people. Now, my question to you is, what do you stand for? Aspire to inspire before you expire.
This is CliffCentral.com.